Hello and welcome to the TAA teleconference published with the University Press, A Brief Introduction to Navigating the University Press World in Difficult Times, presented by Peter Whitaker, a former acquisitions editor at Cornell University Press. Peter worked as an acquisition editor for nearly 20 years, most recently at Cornell University Press, where he rebuilt the press's lists in anthropology, geography, sociology, and urban studies. He began his career at the Guilford Press and then moved to Temple University Press, where he was a senior acquisitions editor. His best-known titles include Dennis Wood's The Power of Maps and Sarah Diamond's History of the Christian Right, Roads to Dominion, a title he signed at Temple University Press, There Goes the Hood, received the 2007 Urban Affairs Association Best Book Award. Peter's writing has been published in the journals Urban Affairs Review and Antipode. Over the past decade, Whitaker has given talks on academic publishing to graduate students and faculty at a number of universities and academic conferences, most recently at Fordham University Law School. He lives in Ithaca, New York. I now turn the teleconference over to Peter.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. This is new to me, so I'll try and speak clearly. And it's strange not to have visual feedback, but I will do my best. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk for about 30 to 40 minutes, and then I will take your questions after that. So that should leave somewhere between 20 minutes and half an hour for questions. I want to talk to you today about the state of university press publishing and how one goes about writing an academic book and finding a publisher. Now, by university press publishing, I mean academic, sort of high-level academic publishing, and I want to make clear that there are commercial publishers like Routledge or Taylor & Francis, for instance, who do similar things. That's what university presses do. I will cover, I will talk a little bit about the state of university press publishing, a little bit about how textbook publishing differs from kind of writing your own book. I just want everyone to know before I start that this isn't really a talk about how to turn a dissertation into a book, which may be of interest to some of you, but that won't be something that I really directly cover here, though a lot of the issues and how publishers think about publishing projects are the same. Let me start with a little bit about the state of university press publishing. In the title for this talk, I used the phrase difficult times, and as a friend of mine who's a press director said, the old bad is the new good in terms of the economic situation. University presses are having a fairly hard time, and there seem to be a few reasons for this. One is just the drop in sales that comes from the what might be called the economic downturn. So last year, sales at university presses averaged, they were about 10% lower, I would say, than in the year before. So that's a drop of 10%, which, of course, affects things quite a bit. The second trend that's been affecting university presses has actually been going on for much longer and in some ways has had a more dramatic effect, and that is the drop in sales to academic libraries. And why this is important is because it used to be, say, 15 or 20 years ago, that university presses could count on selling 500 or 600 hardcover copies of any book they published to an academic library. That's no longer true. And what those 500 or 600 copies subsidized and really covered, the revenue from those sales of those books really covered most of the cost of production and took a lot of the risk out of publishing titles. And it also, in many cases, enabled presses to go right to paperback because they didn't need to worry so much about their revenue stream because they were selling copies to libraries. And often if they were doing a paperback and a hardcover, the hardcover was priced sort of high, shall we say, in a way that would enable the press to recover, as I say, most of its costs. Whereas, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, one could count on selling five or 600 copies. That number is down to maybe 100, 150. And what this means is that every book has to really be able to pretty much carry its own weight these days. There's very much less of a sense that, you know, the hardcovers will somehow take care of and subsidize the publishing to the general market. That has pretty much disappeared. A third trend that we're looking at these days is there's the uncertainty about electronic publishing. There's, given the poor sales of some types of books, publishers are beginning to wonder whether electronic publishing might be a solution, because it won't reduce their cost a huge amount, but at least it will reduce the cost of printing and binding, though you still have to pay an editor, you still have to get the book designed and copy edited and do most of those things that are the real value added, the peer review, for instance, that really help make a university press worth existing. The whole reason, I think, in some ways that they exist is to make the book better, or as economists might say, the value added. And electronic publishing is both in some ways seen as an out, but at the same time, when Amazon is saying, well, we'd like to publish all books at $9.95 or what have you electronically, that's a model that won't work for most university presses, because they simply don't produce enough, they won't sell enough copies at $9.95 or $2.95 or at $30 to cover the costs. $30, I guess they could, but at $9.95, given that they have to give almost half of that to Amazon, it would make it very difficult to cover costs, particularly for books that aren't going to have a huge audience. And finally, and one thing that I'm sure many of you have seen, is that there's clearly something going on with the reading habits of undergraduates these days. And I think the fewer books are being adopted, though I might be wrong, because people are finding that if you assign a book, chances are your students may not be reading it, which of course is troubling for lots of reasons. I can tell you as a publisher, it's troubling both because it's creating poor reading habits that mean that that your student is less likely to be hanging around at a bookstore or an online bookstore looking around to see what other books she needs, but rather, looking in for journal articles or something shorter that requires less concentration. So all this means that university presses are under a lot of pressure. A couple have been shut down. Some are being forced to be much more selective in what they publish. Almost all are shrinking their lists. And what does this mean for you as a potential author as you're beginning to think about this? What it means is that your project has to be better. It means because there's less, there are fewer, I guess, presses that are willing to take a chance on things that are less than in good shape and interesting and engaging and likely to have a market, which means you need to think a little broader about your topic. Is there a way to expand the topic you might want to write about so it's more likely to attract a wider audience, for instance? It also means that on the publishing end, that it will probably take your press, because most presses are trying to do the same as they were before, but with less, that means it may take longer to get your book published. It may be that the press that used to take 10 months from finished manuscript to finished book, you know, that's now going to be 12 months because they have fewer people working in the production department. They may have chosen to cut back that way. And all of that means, though, that you just have to do things well, and that's always been what I've told authors in any case. So you want to write as the best book you can. So why write a book? Let me turn to this now. And the question, there are some questions you want to ask about whether to write a book. You've been, maybe been thinking about it. And so the first question I think you want to ask is whether you have a book's worth of material, or whether you're better off continuing to make your points in journal article form. I think many of you have probably read books where you felt like, well, the author had two or three interesting chapters worth of stuff, and then the rest is kind of padded, or they just kind of keep going on about something which is less important than it needs to be. And you don't want to be in that position. You don't want, it's embarrassing, I think, to have people read your work and think that. So the first question you want to ask is, do you have a book's worth of something to say? The second question is, what is the most effective way for you to make an intervention into a discipline's ongoing discussion? Is it through some journal articles, which hopefully would come out more quickly than a book? Is it by making a larger, more sophisticated argument in a book form? You can marshal more evidence. You can give some subtlety and nuance to the points you need to make because you're not trying to squeeze everything into 30 journal pages. Usually, I found it's often through a combination of media. Journal articles are often more accessible, particularly now in the era of electronic access. But a book will get you outside of your discipline more easily so that people outside of, let's say, the sociology of aging would be more likely to pick it up if they see you've written a book about aging and you're a sociologist, you were expecting them only to be able to find it in some journals that were specific to sociology of aging, for instance. So it does help bring you a wider audience. A second set of questions you want to ask yourself is, what are your institutional constraints? And this is one of the less pleasant parts of my talk. So are you in a department that requires you to publish journal articles to get tenure? So in which case, should you actually put off writing the book till after tenure? Do you need to publish a book in order to get tenure or promotion? You just need to think through these things. And, you know, and also if you're up for tenure, you know, if a book would help you get tenure, will it take too much time given the other commitments you have? And are you better off postponing it until after tenure while you focus on these other things you need to do? If you decide to write a book, let's talk about how you might proceed. Before doing that, I thought I would, given TAA, I thought I would talk for a minute about some of the differences between publishing a textbook and publishing a kind of university press type volume. And some of these are, one is that a university press book, the university presses do publish textbooks, I would note, but generally the kind of book, academic book we're talking about here, we're looking for things that will contribute to the larger body of knowledge rather than offering either a clearly written and standard interpretation or an unusual way of understanding the existing literature. It's really a chance to put forward a whole new set of things for people to think about and know. In addition, an academic book tends to offer the opportunity to reflect on years of research. So if you've been doing a whole set of studies over the past decade or two, and you're thinking, you know, I'd like to sit down and take stock of what I've done, a book is often a great way to do that, and it will encourage you to kind of look up from the micro level of your study, or the particular, not always micro, of course, and sort of look around and think about how to contextualize what you've seen and found over the years, how to understand it, what sorts of situations it might fit into. And so that is something that you can do in a way that I think is really rewarding, in a way that you can, although you can reflect on the everyone else's research in a textbook, it's nice, I think, to be able to do that with one's own work as well. A third difference is that for an academic book, you as author will shape the argument and the logic of the work far more than you will if you're writing a textbook, in part because you're not trying to write something just to get it to fit to existing courses. And what the other side of this really is that when you're writing a textbook, you get often get a good deal of help from your editor, and from other folks at the press who are trying to help you shape the book to make sure that it properly reaches the audience. Unfortunately, in academic publishing, while you sometimes get that, other times you won't. And you tend to get less kind of editorial support. You also have no budget for things like permissions, illustrations, and the like. Although, you know, occasionally for the right book, I think publishers can come up with a little support for that. And finally, we should be clear that it's unlikely you'll make very much money from an academic book. It happens once in a while, but, you know, by the time you think about the time spent in the research you've done, it's not really particularly rewarding, and it's not going to make you, you're not going to be able to send your kids to college or one semester of college on the proceeds. Let me now talk for a minute about how to proceed with the book if you decide to go ahead. Once you've decided that you have a topic in mind that will be something about which you'd like to write, you'll want to flesh out your ideas by preparing a proposal or a prospectus for the book. This is a document that, in its final form, you will send to publishers. It's also a way of fleshing out your ideas and making clear what it is that your book will be. This means a few things. One is, it will give you an opportunity to write out a plan for the book. So if you weren't exactly sure what the book was going to say when you sat down to draw up the proposal, you should be quite sure by the time you're finished. Also, by laying out this outline for the book, it gives you a chance to think about what's missing, so that you may have thought, oh, I should write a book about subject X. Well, in laying out the first go at the table of contents, you may say, you know, I'm trying to make prove a particular argument, and my argument would actually be much stronger if I had a third case study. And what that may actually send you back to do is do some research to provide this third case study that will enable your book to be that much more convincing. And toward that end, I think the proposal is quite useful. It's also really helpful because it forces you to think about your audience and begin to think about the kind of writing you want to do and the kinds of people you want to reach. So I hope that everyone has gotten the handout for the teleconference, the basic elements of a book prospectus, and I'm just going to go over that quickly and talk a little bit about each of the points in turn. So the proposal should start with a clear explanation of the book, what it is, what it's going to be about, how you're going to approach the material, what material you're going to cover, and then something that sets up why the material you and the subject for your book is important and timely and relevant. This usually is, you know, 1 to 4 paragraphs maybe, depending on how much you have to say. I think it is important to be able to set your book up in a way that enables publishers to be drawn in to it. So it's not exactly advertising copy you're writing, but you want it to be compelling and engaging and make a clear argument for why one would want to pick up this book. This explanation section should be followed by a table of contents, which I tend to prefer at least a kind of narrative table of contents. Each chapter should have a title and then 2 paragraphs describing it. One paragraph should describe the content of the chapter, and the other should talk about how the chapter fits into the broader narrative of the book as a whole. So what it is that the chapter accomplishes in pushing the volume towards its goal and in making its argument. This section should be followed by discussion of the competition for your book. You don't want to be snarky about the other competition or snide, but you do want to be clear about what it is that your book will offer that the others do not. So often that we'll talk about the strengths and weaknesses of the other books that are out there. And those of you who have written textbooks, I'm sure, are familiar with this. One tip for writing a section like this is if you can set it up so that it says, well, there are these books out here, but they do X, and there are these other books, but they mostly attend to Y. Well, you can see that there's nothing that quite does what my book does, which is Z. And that often, I think, helps publishers make sense of how to see the world that you're describing and the competition and why there's a clear opening, that is to say, potential market for your book. This should be followed by a discussion of the level at which you intend to write, as it says on the paper, which really means you need to decide, are you only writing for people who've done very high level research in your field? Are you trying to write in a way that will cross out of your discipline? Are you trying to write in a way that will get your book read in undergraduate courses? My own sense is that when I was working as a publisher, I personally preferred books to be written as if they were being aimed at smart juniors and seniors, so people that you could treat as thinking beings who could take in complicated arguments as long as they were presented clearly, and so that any technical terms were defined the first go round, so that and this I found also not only would it serve a kind of upper division first year graduate course market, but it was also a good way to get to people in other fields because it treated them as if they didn't know everything already, but not in a condescending kind of way. So that's the level of the book, and if there's likely to be some course adoption market for it, please mention that. Publishers like to hear that, but please also be realistic, because the last thing publishers want to know is that, you know, if you say, yes, my book will be perfect for courses on kilts in the Scottish snow, but in fact there's only one, you know, in the entire United States, one such course in the United States, it's not going to really do them a huge amount of good unless you're teaching it and you've got, you know, 500 students a semester. So, you know, try and be reasonable and constrained in what you see as possible course use. Then you want to give a publisher the sense of the timeline for the book and its size, because it's based on the size and the number of illustrations and maps, etc. The publisher will be able to then begin to imagine what the book will be like, look like. So a 100,000-word book will probably, if there aren't a lot of illustrations, will probably turn into a 250-page, 256-page work. So they can begin to think, oh, are we going to do this hardcover or hardcover and paperback? How many copies do we think we could sell? How many should we print? And all that will shape how they would price the book as well. And pricing is a tricky thing. Prices have been going up, as you probably have noticed. And when it comes time to talk about choosing a press, we'll come back to that question of price. Finally, you want to finish the proposal out with a paragraph or so about yourself, just to give the editor a sense of who you are. You know, if you've done things that are fairly high profile, it doesn't hurt to mention a couple of those. You can always throw in a CV as well. If some related things in the manuscript have been published in journal articles, you might mention that too. And as I say here, remember that this is the first thing an editor will see. Editors get in many, many proposals, and there's no easier way to reject a proposal than poor grammar, seeing poor grammar and terrible writing, bad spelling. All those things make the editor think, if I can't rely on this person to deliver me a 10-page document that is neat and tidy and well thought out and well done, why in the world should I trust that their research is any different? I need, and so you can do yourself a real favor by spending more time polishing the proposal and making sure that it, you know, get other people to read it and what have you, just to make sure that it will stay on the publisher's desk and not go in the reject pile. So let me just talk for a couple minutes about how to choose a press and what happens, and then I'll take some questions. To choose a press, there are a few things that I like to suggest doing. Before doing that, let me just say a couple more things. You'll want to go once you've picked out a press, you'll want to go to their website and make sure that see what they would like you to submit if you're going to have them consider you, and then that will help you. Once you have that information, you can go back and revise the proposal one more time to see in case they have any particular needs that aren't kind of covered in the generic model. To choose a press, you want to first think about the books you like and look at who publishes them. And you'll want to make a list of those you think would be a good fit with your book. So, and the advantage of that is that if you're writing, let's say, on the sociology of aging, to use this example again, and you have some books on your shelf by a publisher who publishes in this area, odds are that that publisher has a good idea of what is important in the field, that the editor has a specialty in it, so they can really work with you from a knowledgeable standpoint to help you shape your book and help make sure it's as good as it can be. It also means that they're probably already marketing in the field, which really works to your advantage, both because you can be seen with other books that are already being noticed, and also because it means you're not relying on a department's kind of press's overstressed marketing department to remember that your book has to go to the aging conference when no other book the press publishes is going to that conference. So if you find presses that are already working in that area, odds are they will be able to do better by you. You can also consider things like the price of the books. Do you like, you know, of the presses who publish in the areas you like, do you feel like some price their books more reasonably? Are others getting into the $30, $40, $50 range for paperbacks where, you know, you begin to wonder who exactly is going to buy the book if it's priced at that level? And you'll want to think about that. Once you have come up with a kind of short list of people, of presses for your project, then talk to people who've published with the press about their experience. Maybe you know someone, a couple of their authors. Maybe you talk to a few people and it turns out someone else knows someone. And I think that's a great way to find out from people whether they've had a good experience, whether their editor was really friendly until they signed the contract and then they were no help at all, whether the press promised marketing things and actually delivered it, were they happy with the advice they got, you know, all those things that can help you make a better informed decision. You'll also want to consider the tenure-related and hiring-related issues. So university press, you know, for in different fields, things are different, but some places, if it's not a university press but a commercial press, it counts less somehow. And there's, of course, like in most things in life, there's a kind of hierarchy of presses, right? So that people will always say, oh, Oxford is wonderful, they must be great, even though they may be pricing their books really, really high and not doing a lot of copy editing at this point. You know, and they're not alone because everyone's been having to cut back, or many presses have cut back on things like this. You know, none of that would matter because the prestige is there. And in fact, they do terrific books. So, you know, at the other end, if you have a small startup company that nobody's heard of and they're trying to convince you to publish your tenure book with them, I think you need to think really hard and get some advice because no one, even if they're prominent in your department, once you get to the university level, people will be suspicious, I guess I could say. So that can be challenging. So try to narrow it down to one or two presses or three, and then find the editor, the right editor at the press. You can find that on the website. Also, if you know people who've published with a particular press, talk to them about who their editor was and did they like them. And then, shameless as it is, take advantage of that connection. You know, if somebody published with the press and they were happy with it and they like their editor and the book seems to be out there, you know, ask them to introduce you to their editor. Editors meet a ton of people, they get lots of mail, so having someone they trust, and they trust somebody who they've published usually, having that person say, you should meet so-and-so, they have a great project, blah, 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 goes a long way toward giving you a kind of shortcut around what can otherwise be a kind of difficult process. So if you have connections, take advantage of them. Then once you settle on a few presses, you know, talk to the editors and, you know, see who is kind of sympathetic and who's interested into the project and and then talk to them about what they would like to actually see from you to consider the project. Do they need a couple of chapters, or do they need the entire manuscript? Or on the rare case, maybe they'll just say, send me a proposal and a related journal article. But don't hold your breath that that's going to happen. And it's actually not in your interest to sign up for a contract that way, because you want to make sure that you can write to the level you predict in the proposal. And it's good to be kind of forced to produce part or all of the manuscript before getting your contract. In closing, I just want to talk for a second about what happens when your proposal goes to a university press. They have it's a peer-reviewed process. Usually, most presses will send manuscripts or proposals with sample chapters out to two or three reviewers, and they will provide you with comments, or they'll provide the press with comments. Usually, it is blind only in terms of the reviewer, not in terms of who the author is. And if the reviews are positive, the editor will come back to you and say, we are interested in this. I'd like to know, given the feedback you get in the reviews, what you're thinking about the project. Are you going to reshape it somewhat based on the kinds of suggestions you're getting? You know, someone may have said, move chapter 3 further back in the manuscript, or you need to address X and Y. And your editor will then ask you to provide a letter explaining exactly what you plan to do. And it's your option to always say, I don't think, you know, moving chapter 3 back is a good idea, and explain why, and also to say, you know, certain suggestions aren't really germane because that person really wants you to write a different book. And then when that letter is finished, you send it to your editor, and your editor will take it to a board of some kind. Sometimes some presses have internal boards, others have just external or faculty boards, which have to approve every project that goes to a university press before it can be published. And then you will once it gets approved by the board, then you'll get a contract based on that. I think that's it in a nutshell. The important thing is to have interesting ideas, write them up in a manner that people will want to read them. And I think the key to navigating university presses at this time is just doing things a little, you know, better, being able to write well, not have your book be too long, have it be on a topic that will engage people. So those are some of the basics. I'm happy to take your questions. A few little points before I finish. One is that I guess Kim will be sending contact info to all of you, and you should feel free to be in touch. If you don't get your question answered, or if you just want to ask a different question, I guess I have a shameless plug, which is, since I'm not working as an editor now, I am taking on freelance projects if anyone needs editorial advice. And also, I'm available to come to campuses to give a talk on publishing somewhat similar to this one. I think that's it. So if you have a question, I think you're supposed to hit 4-star to unmute, and I'm happy to take questions as they have come.
All right. Thanks, Peter. Does anyone have a question? Just press 4-star to unmute yourself.
Hi, Peter. Thank you very much. Could you say a little bit more about the way in which you do your consulting? That is, do you also consult with people about how, in addition to editorial advice, do you act as a kind of an agent, although I assume probably not like the traditional literary agent, but sort of advice about how to place your book with a university press and things like that?
Yes, I do. I mean, I do everything from, copy editing people's manuscripts to, kind of reading a manuscript and giving feedback on it,
For example, Peter, the topic that you said you would not talk about, but is this something you might consult about? That is the question that some people I know have, how to convert my PhD thesis into a book, or should I? Is that a consulting topic?
Oh, that's certainly a consulting topic. And finding a press and sort of reading a proposal and talking about, how to improve it and how to shape it for particular presses or whatever, and which presses are appropriate are all things that are indeed consulting topics.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks. Anyone else?
Maybe I'll ask one other while I'm still unmuted.
Yes,
sir.
I have a question. Can you tell me, sort of describe, what are the percentages of when someone calls cold, even with a good prospectus, but if it's a cold call to a university press, what percentages are encouraged, what percentages are just cut?
There are two answers to that. I think the answers are divided between choosing well and just sort of scattershot. So if it's scattershot, the odds are pretty small that people will pick up on it. If you choose presses in the that are already working in that field, your odds improve dramatically, assuming that your project is interesting and timely in the field. What's harder now is that presses, as I said at the beginning, presses are taking on fewer projects, and this means that sometimes projects that a press might have been willing to take on before, there are a lot more letters going out, I should say, that say, we think your work is very smart, we just can't take it on at this time because we don't think we can sell it sufficiently. In the publishing world, we always call those projects over the transom projects. And, I would say when I was working as an editor, one in 20 would fly. But in part, that's because there were also lots of really idiosyncratic things that people are working on where you think, why didn't this person's advisor tell them to stop this long ago? Anyway, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Okay, I think the first person had another question.
I understand that it's a tougher road to get your book published by university press overall. Are there particular fields that are better and worse? And in particular, for example, I know that you have been an editor in the field of, I guess it's, I don't know if I have it quite right, but urban studies,
mm-hmm.
Geography, and related.
Mm-hmm.
Fields, maybe architectural history, Is that a good field or a bad field or about the same as every other field?
You know,
are there any fields that are blossoming in that respect?
Sure. I think fields related to new technologies
mm-hmm.
are blossoming. Things related to kind of medical disease science studies related
mm-hmm.
things have blossomed, and there's already beginning to be a sense that, you know, is its time coming and going? Things that analyze the current economic crisis
mm-hmm.
That are well researched. I think there's a very strong audience for the urban studies was doing well for me in part because those are books that were a good mix of social science and contemporary issues. And of course, any book about New York tends to get picked up as well.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.